Homestyle Green, episode 239. How do you build the right home for you? G'day and welcome back to another episode of Homestyle Green. This is the podcast dedicated to inspiring people to make a better place to live. Nearly 6 years ago, I had Jennifer Crawford on one of the early episodes of Homestyle Green, and she was just starting out her business, Our New Home Coach. Jennifer helps people, whether they're renovating an existing house or building new, to navigate the process of design, brainstorming, right through to detailing, and then through the construction process of building projects. One of her focuses is really helping people to understand what it is that they need and want from their new home and how to get it. It's a really valuable service, and I think there is a place for more people doing what she does to provide specific and independent advice on that whole process, because for a lot of people it's a bit of a minefield and it's a huge investment. So it definitely pays to have someone like Jennifer to help you get it right. Let's pick up the conversation with Jennifer. We started out by going back over what it's been like in the last five or six years, and particularly in the ups and downs of 2020. Thank you, Jennifer. It's great to have you back on the show. I was looking through the archives. You were actually one of my early guests, episode 71, I think, back in 2014 it was. Mm-hmm. And my new home coach was just getting started, yes. I think, back then.
Yes.
Here you are now. How have things been over the last 5 years?
How long have you got? I'll try to keep this brief. So, yeah, I started my business just over 6 years ago. So, yes, when I first spoke to you, that was very early days. Those early days weren't necessarily easy. So to supplement my income, I was working part-time at, first for a building company and then for an architectural practice and still doing my business stuff. So that was...
Yeah, because you're a registered architect.
Yes,
yeah?
So I'm a registered architect. So I was doing, you know, the part-time stuff to pay the bills and then my business stuff to for fun, but also because I still believe in it and I still do. Mm. I'm still here. So then at the beginning of last year, I actually got offered a full-time role at a home building company in Sydney, a project home builder. And the idea to me of having regular salary and not having to chase invoices and things like that was very refreshing. And I'm like, you know what? And I was kind of exhausted at that point. And I thought, well, I'll just take this job. And I did. And I'm so glad that I did because I learned a lot there. I saw a lot because a lot of architects don't deal in the volume housing market or the mass housing market. They kind of see it as a bit of a, oh, that's not us, that's them, you know. Mm. And in my mind, you know thine enemy, you know. I want to understand how the system works. I want to understand it from the inside. I want to understand how they work, why they work the way that they do, and, you know, how as architects we can potentially compete or not even compete but exist side by side, you know, and you know, I guess tailor our services to a different market or open up the – because I see the traditional architectural market as very small. And I think there's a massive people, like there's a massive interest in quality of design and stuff like that. But a lot of architects aren't necessarily, in my personal view, attracting that market or dealing with that sort of mass market because they say, oh, they don't have any money, so, you know, not interested, whatever. So I was there for a year and that was great. And then 2020 started and, you know, we had all the bushfires in Australia and that was hideous and it actually affected the sort of work that we were doing in the home building company and there was real potential for a change in, you know, how we – and I was so close to pushing stuff, you know, for how we could improve the houses that we built and all that sort of stuff. Then COVID hit, bang, and I got made redundant. So along with 10% of the company, so it wasn't just me. I didn't take it personally. It's just like how things are. So I went home and thought, okay, what am I going to do? I could sit on the sofa and cry or I could just jump back into my business. So I did that. I jumped straight back into my business, opened the next Monday.
Wow.
And yeah, so since May, so that was the beginning of May that I reopened, and I have been positively surprised at how much interest I've had in my business since then.
So since talk then, us through, or just remind people what it is that you do. How do you help people?
Yeah. So my business is called Our New Home Coach, and yes, I'm a registered architect, but my business is slightly different from a standard architectural practice. So I help people early in the process, very early in the process, whether they're thinking of renovating or building new or whatever, just talk through all their options, ideas, and what's, you know, what's available to them or what they can do from an approvals point of view, from a budget point of view, all that sort of stuff, and then get them, you know, on their way. So the sort of things that I talk about with people, some architects do that for free in anticipation of getting the project, but, you know, often life gets in the way, the project doesn't proceed, and then, you know, the architect gets their nose out of joint because they gave all this advice for free.
Yeah.
Client gets their nose out of joint because you didn't tell me you had to pay for this, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Right, yeah.
So it's all messy.
It's probably not fully independent either. Yes. If someone's doing it as a loss leader or as a marketing exercise, they're going to, so getting a sway, a slight direction.
But me, like, people pay me for my time. You know, there's no, I don't do anything for free. But people are happy to pay for advice, and I might only see some of my clients for an hour or 2 hours, and we'll just go through all their ideas, their issues, what, you know, and I might send them just, you know, depending on the nature of the project, you know, I might just send them to a builder, say, look, just get a builder to do that. You don't need an architect for that. Or I might send them to a draftsperson. You don't need an architect. Just go to a draftsperson, get them to draw it up. Or in other cases, I will say you definitely need architectural help because this is complicated.
And a project manager and a marriage counsellor.
Yeah. Well, an old boss of mine said that residential architecture is 20% design and 80% marriage counselling.
Yeah.
And he's right, you know.
So, absolutely.
Yeah, so I'll point them in the direction because a lot of people have no idea where to start. Like they have no idea of the process, no idea of the amount of money involved, no idea how long it's going to take, you know, all these things.
And so, is that a problem of the industry? Is that a failing of the architecture and design industry, do you think?
Partly. And also, you know, things like, I don't know if you have them in New Zealand, but you know, TV shows like The Block and, you know,
absolutely.
Renovation Rescue, all that crap.
Grand Designs.
You know, yeah, all that stuff. I mean, Grand Designs is the good one, but still, you know.
Well, the thing that surprises is it's a constant theme in that show is that people jump into stuff without a project manager.
Yeah.
And expect to be able to just do stuff themselves. And end up probably spending more money and definitely taking more time because of trying to cut costs at the outset.
Yeah. And so my thing is, okay, let's go in, let's talk about this as an idea. And, you know, I think of myself sometimes as a bit of a party pooper because I'll go in and people have this idea, oh, yeah, we want to go up and we want to spend $250,000. It's like, well, you know that going up is a minimum $500,000 exercise. And they're like, what? No, really? And it's a two-year project. What? No, we want to be in by Christmas. It's like, no, it's not going to happen. So then they sit down and they kind of freak out a little bit. Like, what do you mean, you know? But I'd rather have them freak out at the outset and reset their expectations and know that they're actually in for something big, or maybe they cut their cloth slightly differently and work with the budget that they have. Because, you know, I've worked for architectural practices and I've got architectural friends. I've heard all the stories of, you know, you go through the approval process, which might take a year or longer because of whatever issue there is, and there's always going to be some sort of issue or other. And then you go to tender and then the tenders come back at double what everyone was planning, and then no one can build it because they can't get the finance. Like it's a killer. It's because people come in.
When you've got permission.
Yeah, and you're so emotionally invested and like everything, and then you just can't do it. And I see so many houses that are sold with DA approval attached, and I can tell behind the scenes that's what's happened. Like they've gone through that process. I know the house next door, one next door to me, you know, 20 years ago that happened.
And they end up just selling it and get it and walking away. Yeah,
and so a savvy builder bought the house next door, used that DA approval, did a slight amendment to it, built the house, and he lived in there for a couple of years and then unsold it. So, because he's a smart guy. So I kind of want to avoid these nightmare scenarios that are all too common. And so, yeah, I might be a bit, I don't know, brutal at the beginning.
A reality check for people.
But then people can reframe it and go, okay, well, that's what we wanted, but what can we actually do? What can we actually achieve? And then we break it down and, you know, they work out what they really need rather than what they think they need. And then there's also this thing about, you know, doing stuff for resale and like people designing for other people that may or may not ever live in their house. It's like, well, you're living here. Like how long are you planning to live here? I'll have two different conversations if someone says to me, oh, we're only planning to live here for 2 years. That's one conversation. Or we're going to die in this house. You know, that's another conversation. And the amount of money you spend and the you know, the quirky things you do will change depending on, you know, which of those scenarios you're looking at.
How do you counter that? Because a lot of that will be driven by either the real estate market as it is or a perception of the real estate market. And I'm guessing it's things like, oh, we've got to have a spare bedroom because you need four bedrooms and a double garage.
Yeah.
How do you have that conversation with people and convince them to build for themselves rather than some future
buyer? That's an interesting question. I had some clients in a suburb of Leichhardt, inner west suburb, quite a nice suburb, not far from me. Had my first session with them 3 years ago, and they wanted to do stuff for a particular budget in that particular time frame, which were both underestimated, you know, from reality. They also wanted to get a four-bedroom house out of it. They wanted to live in the house, like, for quite a few years. They've got little girls, so they wanted to stay there while the girls grew up, went to school, blah, blah, blah. And so I managed to show them what they really needed, which was, you know, a new sort of main bedroom suite for them and a new living area, new kitchen, blah, blah, blah. And then the house ended up being a three-bedroom house. But the amenity in that house, like the quality of light, the comfort, the warmth, the, you know, all the rest, kind of meant that they could live in there comfortably. We also included a little study nook on the way to the main bedroom so that, you know, they could, two of them can work from home in that little study nook if they need to. So that study nook did the job of the fourth bedroom, if you like, because a lot of people use the fourth bedroom, you know, for a home office or whatever. So they've got that function and that facility without the extra room. Now, the constraints that they had on their site was, you know, floor space ratio and setbacks and some neighbouring trees, which caused a nightmare, but that's another story. But if they had pushed it really hard, yes, we could probably have got a fourth bedroom in there, but sacrificing the quality of all the other rooms, because that fourth bedroom would have been small, their main bedroom would have been a lot smaller, you know, and it's like, well, is it really valuable to have that fourth room that you may or may not use, or to, you know, to bring it back to what you'll actually use and be a bit clever with how you position functions and stuff. And they're, you know, the wife of that couple, she was always, oh, should we go for the fourth bedroom? Like, it was always niggling in the back of her mind. Yeah. Once they'd finished, she's like, I'm so glad we didn't go for that fourth bedroom because, you know, we got what we need and, you know, we haven't overcapitalized and, you know, we will still, when we do sell this house eventually, we will still, you know, we'll make money on it. So, you know, they're happy campers. But sometimes it can be a tricky conversation because, you know, people have what they think they need or almost what, you know, keeping up with the Joneses, you know, what they think the Joneses have and what, but they need that. It's like, no, let's talk about what you really need. And it's always, this is where the marriage counselling comes in because you can always find out with a couple, there's always one, and it's not a gender thing because it can be either way, one is leaning in and one is leaning out.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
And you've got to reach the person who's leaning out and find out what the one thing is that they need, you know, because they're fighting for one thing. You give them that, and then the person leaning in gets everything else that they want. You don't give them, the leaning out person, what they need, and the leaning in person is not going to get anything. So, you know, it's that balance. And the leaning out person kind of doesn't want much, but they have the power to scuttle the whole project, you know.
Yeah.
And it's, like I say, it's not a gender thing. It can, sometimes it's the woman leaning out, sometimes it's, you know, the man leaning out, whatever. But it kind of, you've got to get the leaner outer invested, and when they're invested, like, everything flows from that.
And I guess that's critical, is undercovering really what they do want. Like, do they absolutely want that fourth bedroom, or is it somewhere that they can work or study, is it because they're worried about
the COVID thing has really changed things. I saw a lady like 2 weeks ago, and she had been working, she's also in Balmain, she had been working with an architect like at the end of last year, and they had renovated before and they knew what they wanted to do, and you know, they had drawings and it was great. And then they were just thinking about approvals and all that sort of stuff. And then COVID hit, and she's now working from home 4 days a week. So all of a sudden the scheme that they had at the end of last year, it doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
So now she's like, I need an office. But, you know, so it was, okay, so the scheme that you worked out before, there's a lot of validity in that. So don't throw it away. Like, don't start again. But how can we tweak that and flip this to there and flip that to there and move that around to get you what you need in terms of home office? And now, you know, where they live, if they go up, they've got, you know, really nice views of the Harbour Bridge and all that sort of stuff. So do that for your office, where you're going to be there, you know.
Yeah.
Now 4 days a week rather than your bedroom. So it's like that level of thinking. And COVID has definitely affected what people, or how people want their houses.
You mentioned that. Yeah, you mentioned that you've things have gone really well for you. You're busy. Yes. What do you put that down to?
I think everyone being at home, working at home, homeschooling, all that sort of stuff. So there's two lands. I often tell my clients there's two lands. There's architect's land and there's project home land. And I think the two of those have reacted totally differently to COVID. So in Project Homeland, which is where I was at the beginning of this year, I think it has really struggled and continues to struggle, and that's why I was made redundant. But in Architect Land, which deals with, you know, renovations and you know, all this sort of stuff and squeezing more out of, you know, what you have, everyone being at home has gone, okay, well, now I've got to work here, the kids have got to do school here, we've still got to live here, like, and we've got to still talk to each other as a family and not be fighting all the time over real estate, you know. Our dining room table at one point was just chaos. We had two kids, a husband and a wife, all trying to work on one dining room table. It's just, like, ridiculous, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know we're not alone. So, you know, all of that, people are at home going, and they can't go on overseas holidays at the moment. So, you know, it's like, well, why don't we spend the money on the house? But they don't know how to do it, and that's why they're calling me.
So there's a change in function of those spaces, and perhaps a change in budget or available money to do different things.
Yeah.
Has you seen any change in people's thinking about health and how healthy homes are or not?
Yes. I saw a lady yesterday in a house that has mold issues and damp issues, and she has been working from home a lot, and she said all this, like, they've only been in the house for, what, 5 months or something. And she said, this winter I have this, like, tickly cough that I just can't get rid of. I'm like, well, you know it's related to the mold, don't you? And she's like, yeah, I thought so, but I thought I was going mad. I'm like, no, you're not going mad. So I actually recommended for them, before they even think about the renovation, is getting a mold expert in to look at their house and see what they can do to fix all of that, even if they don't do any renovations, you know, just fix, you know, because their wardrobes, their clothes are going moldy in the cupboards and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, like, that seriously needs to be addressed. And definitely the bushfires at the beginning of the year, like even before COVID hit, the idea of, and this is when I was still working for the builders, the idea of indoor air quality all of a sudden became front of mind for everyone, because we had smoke in our houses. You know, you would wake up in the morning and you could smell smoke in your bedroom. Like, that's not good. So, you know, people, all of a sudden indoor air quality is a thing, because the kids can't play. Like my kids last summer, you know, there were so many days at school that they couldn't even go outside and play at lunchtime because of the air quality.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Which is not something you really associate with Australia.
No, and not with Sydney at all. But this is like central Sydney, and the kids, they probably had like 30 days last year, you know, at the end of last year, that they couldn't go out at lunchtime because of poor air quality. So,
and how well do you think the houses in Australia are equipped at separating? Because, I mean, to have indoor air quality when it's not so great outside, you need an effective barrier between indoor and outdoor, don't you?
Yeah, and we don't have that, generally speaking.
Yeah.
You know, traditionally speaking, very, very poor, you know. And I know that, you know, there's a lot of people in the passive house movement that, like, this is part of the whole thing about passive house. And, yes, that's, you know, brilliant, but they – currently, they don't exist in Australia. Mm. There's more and more coming. Yeah, here and there. There's
and it's generally houses. New houses, whereas we're talking a lot about renovating and how we fix existing houses.
Yeah, so that's really hard. It is really hard. And even, you know, when I did the passive house course, because I'm a certified passive house designer, our teacher there, he said to retrofit houses. Passive house is really, really hard. So he prefers to work on new build, and I can totally understand that, because it's just
blank slate's much easier to work
with.
You
just build it in, you know. Yeah. And there's so much in, you know, and I've been in so many quirky old houses over the last couple of months that there's really weird things that people have done over time, and you go, why did you do that? To fix it is really, really hard. So,
and is it hard also to convince people to spend money and potentially significant money on something that is maybe not that sexy? Because, I mean, you could spend a lot of money on improving the envelope of a building and none of that's going to make your kitchen look any better.
Absolutely. I used to live in a house, like in the late 90s, I lived in a house that was, we rented, but it was a weatherboard semi, and it was cold. It was like living in a hard tent, basically.
Yeah,
in winter, and you could breathe, wake up in the morning and breathe and see your breath, like in the you're in bed under the doona, and you can see your breath. It's like that cold.
And they say that Australia doesn't get cold.
Yeah, because we're in denial in Sydney that we actually have winter. Like, we don't have it, and then we're shocked by it every year. Oh, like a goldfish.
It's cold.
Oh, it's cold. Yeah. Anyway, that's another issue. But but this house, you know, had damp, mold. Termites, everything, you know. And I said to my husband at the time, he's still my husband, sorry, I haven't divorced.
At
the time, I said to my husband, you know, you could easily spend $100,000 on this house fixing it up, and you wouldn't see, like, it would be completely invisible. You wouldn't see where you had spent the money. Like, you would feel it, but you wouldn't see it. It's not like a sexy stone benchtop or anything like that. You know, and this particular house.
And that also means that the real estate, a potential future real estate agent wouldn't see it, and the bank probably wouldn't see it either, would they?
No, nobody sees it except the person living in the house. And our current house that we live in, because we still rent, our landlords have had real estate agents through in the past that have suggested to them, oh, well, you could do this and you could do that and you could, you know, they wanted to put in this sexy glass balustrade. And when they did renovate, I actually helped them with the renovation and talked them out of probably at least $30,000 worth of expenditure, including the glass balustrade, because I said, look, if you're renting this to families, we're a family, if you're renting it to other families, I can tell you that no one wants to stand there and polish the snot off that glass balustrade for the rest of their lives. I haven't got time for that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So save your money on that, you know, and maybe put some, I don't know, nicer light fittings in, or, you know, nicer kitchen fittings, or, you know, we fought really hard to get a really good oven. So we got that, you know, so save the money on the glass balustrade and give us a really good oven and, you know, happy days. So, yeah.
So that sounds like a fairly good landlord.
So lucky,
with a good tenant as well. Yeah. But how do we address that on a broader scale about investing in those things or people valuing those things that do actually matter to the function and the health of the home, as opposed to the tap fittings and the beautiful benchtop?
Good question. I don't know the answer to it. Part of it is a cultural thing. My brother lives in Hamburg in Germany. He's been living there for about 5 years now. And the whole it's a cultural thing. I'm not sure what it's like in New Zealand, but in Australia, tenants are scumbags. They're low-life, dirty tenant scumbags. I know because I've been one for 23 years now. And you're treated like lower than the low. You know, because you rent, so you must be a lower form of life. So everything's done on the cheap, and there's a lot of like mum and dad landlords that just have one investment property or maybe two. See, in Germany, like renting is a valid lifestyle choice. You know,
and across Europe.
So you have. Yeah. So in my brother's experience, he flat shares in an old Hamburg apartment. Like it's a brilliant apartment. With a lady that's been renting there in the same room for like 25 years, you know.
Well, and that's a big part of it, right? Because people don't necessarily want to not rent, but they want security of tenure.
That's all. Like we've rented the same place now for since my son was 2 months old. He's turning 14 at the end of the year. So
because, but that's quite rare.
Yeah, that's very rare, and we're lucky because our landlords are really nice people. You know, they're not fools either. They're very businesslike, but they're very professional and they treat us with respect and we, you know, treat their property with the required amount of respect in return.
It's good investment to have a long-term tenant.
Yeah.
So how has you mentioned passive house certificate. Has that changed the way that you work and the advice that you give?
Not in the renovation space, to be frank. Mm-hmm. If I was talking to people about new houses, then yes. But and I would so love for a client to come to me and say, I would like to build a new passive house. Like that would be, you know, a dream for me. Hasn't happened yet. Okay, it may happen at some point and, you know, I would welcome it to happen. So if anyone's out there, you know, give me a call. But
passive house designer right there.
But in the renovation space, unless you have like a serious amount of money, you know, if you're doing an addition and then you want to retrofit the rest of the house, like a lot of the old houses that I see, like it's just, it's so, so hard.
Mm.
So maybe like you would never get to passive house standard. Like you just wouldn't. So what you have to be a bit more pragmatic and just look at the spaces and how you can improve them, how you make them better. But you in real life, sorry, but you're not going to get to passive house standard. Like if you did, like just it's the cost of doing that, like it's really hard. Like if people have done that with old, you know, 19th century houses, like good luck to them. That is great, and I would love to hear about it. But
and it's a big project, and it's significant
huge.
Investment.
It's huge.
What's the step between those two extremes? What can people do to improve the actual performance of their house, not just the street appeal?
Yeah, well, things like you know draft proofing and stuff is legit and is real. And, you know, if they're thinking of renovating, like, you know, simple things like where you put your windows, your location of windows and your ventilation and all that sort of stuff. You know, all the, like, first principle stuff that everyone's been talking about forever. That's still valid. You know, it's not scientifically tested like passive house is, you know, with all the data and all the rest. But it's still worthwhile to do and thinking about, you know, your materials you're using and all that sort of stuff. And just not doing anything stupid. There's a lot of stupid stuff that people do. I go into houses and people have bought houses and people have previously done work, and you go, what were you thinking? Like who thought that was a good idea, you know? Because they've created rooms that are dark and kind of a bit, you know, just not nice to be in. And you're like, why would you want that in your house, you know? In Balmain especially, you've got really small houses. You've got to make them, they've got to work hard because they're not big. So
you
want every room to be as pleasant as possible, you know.
I like that idea of making the room, all the rooms and all the spaces work hard.
They've got to work hard, yeah.
In your services, you mentioned you're having some initial meetings, people getting them kind of aligning their expectations. Do you work beyond that? Do you work with some clients through the process, even when they're engaging another architect?
So I might see some people for only an hour or 2 hours. Other people, I will help them. They might want to go to the next step and get a concept plan done, which basically gets all our ideas and puts them into a drawing that they can then talk to other people about.
Uh-huh.
Then some people might want further assistance to get like approvals and stuff, and you know, I'm happy to help them through that process. And I actually work with some draftspeople and people to do drawings because they're quicker and cheaper than me. Then other people who are working with other architects or designers or whatever sometimes might come to me just for a second opinion or a sanity check, and I can, like the lady that I saw, the home working lady, I told her, look, take this back to your architect. You've worked with them for months, you know, don't throw that away. You don't need to start again with me, you know, but here's these ideas, just take these tweaks back to them and let them, you know, work with them to do it. She's like, okay.
Yeah.
Because I don't have to do everything for everybody, you know.
I think also that's so valuable to have another trusted person that you can just, because this is, it's a big investment, first of all, but it's also for a lot of people, might be the first time they've ever done anything like this, and they're putting all this trust in one person.
Yes.
So it totally makes sense to have someone to help navigate that and just check that they're on the right track and that they're not being pulled down a rabbit hole for.
Yeah. So, for example, a client I had probably about two and a half, three years ago, he bought a house already DA approved. So he didn't need a whole new design, but we tweaked a couple of things because he wanted a couple of things changed, and that was fine. We got, you know, got the construction certificate approval and everything, and he just wanted me there almost as insurance during the construction process. He had a really good builder, but, you know, builders and people sometimes don't speak the same language, you know, and I can act as an interpreter. So we would go to I would go to a site meeting every week, and, like, it was fine. I didn't really have to, like, fix stuff or anything, but he'd get prices in and he'd say, Jen, what do you think about that? And I'd say, yeah, that's reasonable, or you know, something else. And sometimes the builder would be there at a site meeting and he would say blah 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 blah, and the client would look at me with fear in his eyes and go, what the hell is that? And I would say, well, what he means is blah 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 blah, and I would speak in client language, and he'd go, oh, is that all? And I'd go, yeah, that's all. And he'd go, that's fine. And then the builder would go, great. And off they go, you know.
It absolutely is that interpreter. You know, there's so much jargon and assumed knowledge. People, builders and architects, you know, they've spent so long in that space that they just think that everyone knows the abbreviations and the terminology.
One architect, he'd be an elder statesman now that I worked with like 20 years ago. He used to call it RSJing because he had a meeting once when he was, you know, young architect, whatever, where he went to talk to someone and said, you know, on site, oh, yeah, we'll put an RSJ here or we'll put an RSJ there. And the client turned around and said, sorry, what's an RSJ? And he's like, oh, sorry, it's a rolled steel joist. It's a steel beam. And the client went, oh, okay, now I get it. And that was like a learning for him. That.
Yeah.
And so when we sometimes got caught up in the office talking about blah, blah, he'd say, oh, don't you go RSJing now. So I'm very aware of when I'm RSJing.
And I imagine that type of thing does happen all the time. And it's a great analogy, having an interpreter there of just helping explain some of the language and some of the also the processes. Yeah, a lot of people don't necessarily And
yeah.
It's not, you know, it's not like going and buying something. You know, you go to the supermarket or the hardware store.
Yeah.
Even the process of finding things, getting prices.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the other, the very murky thing in the building industry, that there's never just one price for anything.
Yes.
It's everything depends on, on a whole bunch of stuff. It's really useful to have someone like yourself helping people.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's exciting on a couple of fronts. Obviously, for you and to be able to get the company back up and running, great for you. But I think it's really good for the industry as well that there is a market for your type of services. And I hope it does continue to grow. I hope others start copying what you're doing, because I think it's a really valuable service and beneficial for both the industry, but also for homeowners, consumers as well.
Yeah, I'm not fussed. If people want to do what I do, like, go for it, because there's plenty of people out there that need help, you know, need assistance, and I can't see them all. So,
I think it's going to benefit everyone if people make better decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So if people do want to reach out, where do they get in touch with you?
Well, they can have a look at my dodgy website, which is ournewhomecoach.com.au, or they can see me on my Facebook page or my recently relaunched Facebook group, which is Our New Home Coach Insiders. And that group has a whole mix of people. So there's quite a few professionals in there, architects, landscape people, interior designers, even engineers and planners and people. And then a whole heap of people that are just interested in, like, building and renovating and that sort of stuff. So we'll definitely getting more conversation there.
Awesome. We'll put links to those so people can reach out. And you got some good testimonials on the site and some of the work that you've been involved with, so people can check that out. Hey, great to catch up again, Jennifer. It's been awesome. I've been watching some of your work on social media over the years, and it's fantastic that there is that demand. So thank you, and good luck with the next little chapter.
Yes, thanks so much, Matthew.
Jennifer Crawford there of Our New Home Coach, and check her out at ournewhomecoach.com.au. She's also pretty active on Twitter, and you can check her out on Facebook as well. And she's got some great blogs on her website at ournewhomecoach.com.au. Definitely check her out if you're in the area. And it'd be great to have more people like Jennifer doing a similar sort of thing, helping out people on that journey, because it's such a big investment, whether you're building a new home or even just going in a decent size renovation, retrofit of an existing house, or even just having someone at the outset, like Jennifer says. Sometimes she helps people figure out if they actually need an architect or if they could use a draftsperson, maybe even just get a builder or point them in the right direction if they do in fact need to go all the way and get a qualified architect on board. I really like what she said as well about she would love to get someone to come along to say, I want to build a passive house. That's part of her dream. And I know people are out there who want to do that. And that's a big part of what I'm encouraging people to do is as clients, as customers, to really push architects, push your builders to go there, to go to really high levels of performance, because you'll find that a lot of designers and a lot of builders do want to go on that journey. They're just looking for the clients to ask them and give them permission to do it. Love to get your thoughts on this show. You can always email me, matthew@homestylegreen.com. Love to get your feedback and also your ratings and reviews over at iTunes, Apple Podcasts, wherever you download and listen to podcasts. It helps expand the audience and get all these ideas out to more people. Thanks very much for tuning in. Now you go and make yourself a better place to live.